Good morning. Jeremiah 8, verses 18, and chapter 9, verse 1. Today our readings begin in a place of lament. The prophet Jeremiah has had to bring a hard word to his people, a message of devastating change. It is hard to be a prophet, to be a people in hard times, when experiencing the ravages of war. Today the prophet laments. My joy is gone, grief is upon me, my heart is sick. Hark, the cry of my poor people from far and wide in the land. Is the Lord not in Zion? Is her king not in her? Why have they provoked me to anger with their images, with their foreign idols? The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the hurt of my poor people, I am hurt. I mourn, and dismay has taken hold of me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then has the health of my poor people not been restored? Oh, that my head were a spring of water, and my eyes a fountain of tears, so that I might weep day and night for the slain of my poor people. The second reading is Matthew chapter 18, verses 10 to 12. Our gospel reading was chosen in honor of the path many have walked this week towards forgiveness and reconciliation. Deep within the gospel is a call to walk the endless path of forgiveness. Today we hear this call within the teachings of Jesus. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seek that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 that were not to go astray. Even so, it is not the will of our Father, which is in heaven, that one of these little ones should perish. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever ye shall lose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again, I say unto you, that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Till seven times? Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times 7. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Will you join me in prayer? May the words of my mouth, the meditations of our hearts, the actions of our lives be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So I'm at the P&E, not Playland, but the other part of the P&E. It's Friday afternoon, and the forum has been turned into a huge hearing room with a stage at one end of it. And it's decked in beautiful cedar planking with huge pieces of beautiful red and black painted carvings. There's several at the front, and there's two at the entrance. The room seats, I would say, between 1,000 and 2,000 people, not counting the amount of space all around. It's not full, but there are a lot of people. The smell of sweetgrass and the sound of drumming hang in the air. Peggy Cave and Linda Hibbard and Trina and I have come to witness the proceedings of the National Gathering of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a government-sponsored commission put in place by the current government in an attempt to hear and address the devastating history of Indian residential schools, to allow an opportunity for the truth of what happened to Aboriginal children in these schools to be told, heard, and acknowledged, in the belief that hearing the truth is a necessary precondition for healing and towards a new relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in Canada. We were there to witness that historic event. We sat down not far from the front, and Joan Morris, a friendly-looking woman, probably in her late 60s, came forward onto the stage, a few people surrounding her, supporting her. She told the story of herself and her parents and her grandparents, who were all taken from their families and spent their entire childhood, with brief breaks in the summer, in Indian residential school. She also told, and this was a piece of the history that I was less familiar with, of a hospital in Nanaimo set up to deal with Native children and some adults who got sick at residential schools, where experimentation, forced sterilization, extended shock treatment were all performed on children and adults. Yeah, that's what I did too. What? Yeah. She stepped down, and Nora Hanous, a woman a little younger than me, whose mother and aunts and uncles attended residential schools and thus had no experience with parents, took the stage and talked about the effects of the residential school legacy on the next generation and the challenge to, quote, take back what is mine, my language, and my culture. She stepped down. Carol Lucas stepped forward, better known, she said, in her childhood school as number 66. Talked of thinking as a six-year-old child just arrived at residential schools that her parents must have pulled a trick on her. Tricked her into being there, confused on the first night when she was scared and in her own little bed in a long series of beds in the dormitory, that she wasn't allowed to go crawl in with her sister. She talked of getting punished for seeking comfort from her sisters, confused that she wasn't allowed to have anything to do with her brothers, who were just over there, and being sexually abused by the priests repeatedly for years. She talked of her rebellion at these abuses. She said that she was a bit of a rebel and a protector of others, and how frustrating it was that she couldn't protect some of the other girls. She talked of her late sister and her mother, who will never get to tell the truth of their experience in residential schools. She stepped down. John Dennis stepped forward with his brother and talked of his 10 years in residential schools and trying to learn ever since not to hate Catholics and not to drown the pain in alcohol and drugs. It kept going and going and going. We stepped out after a while. Because as we sit there, these stories become like wave upon wave of grief and pain crashing on the shores, and the words of the prophet Jeremiah come to me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician here? Why is the health of my poor people not restored? And is restoration of a people and a culture after generation upon generation of this kind of treatment even possible? That is my question to God. And for those of us whose life experience is so utterly different from this, how can we even begin to understand, let alone participate in healing? And as churches who ran these very schools, who hired well-intentioned teachers who loved their children, and also predators who abused them, and who for decades, and we, a church, who for decades refused to hear and acknowledge the realities of these experiences. How do we now that we hear these stories, engage in a new and respectful relationship with people broken by the actions of our ancestors? Is there a balm? Is there a way? It's hard to know how to bring these questions to this place this morning. And I really agonized. Because unless you have experienced these things, unless you know someone who's been through residential schools or whose parents have been, it feels unbelievable. Like some story from some other place in the world where really bad things happen. This is Canada. This is British Columbia. This is our story. It's part of our Canadian history and the history of the church that I never learned about in school. For me, the first people to bring this part of our history to light, ironically, were church people, telling me what our residential schools did to generations of children. And here we sit as a congregation without a strong connection locally with Native people and culture, exploring ministry with people of a variety of other different cultures of the world, but not particularly connected to Aboriginal ones. And I wonder what our role is. Well, first of all, we are Canadians. This is the Christian Church and the United Church of Canada. And we need to know the truth. The Truth and Reconciliation Project is spot on in recognizing that truth is a necessary precondition for healing. Without it, the healing will not happen. And that means that our church history and our history as a nation is going to need a little bit of a rewrite to include this hard to write, hard to face, devastating reality. Do you know that Duncan Campbell Scott, the head of Indian Affairs from 1913 to 1932, 19 years as head of Indian Affairs, said, and I quote, "I want to get rid of the Indian problem. Our objective is to continue until there is not a single Indian in Canada who has not been absorbed into the body politic." There's a piece of history that needs to be written into our history books and known. The body politic he was talking about is the Western Christian culture. The residential schools that the churches ran served the purpose acknowledged now by our current Prime Minister, quote, "to kill the Indian in the child." Some well-intentioned teachers took jobs in residential schools out of a genuine desire to love and nurture children and give them a good foundation for life, and teachers spent their careers trying to do that. These same teachers were devastated to learn the effects of residential schools on their students, and often later to learn what was happening to students in dormitories and dining halls and infirmaries while they were there right under their noses, and they knew nothing of it. We need to hear their stories. We need to know the truth and let that truth become a part of the body politic, part of the church, part of our nation. Denying or ignoring that truth doesn't make it go away. It only allows it to continue its corrosive effects on our church and on our nation and on all of those individual survivors of residential schools and their children and grandchildren. Only it's beneath the surface. So first, truth heard. And somehow there is healing balm in that. But it doesn't stop there. Truth also needs to be acknowledged. Our churches and our nations need to approach every single survivor and their children and grandchildren and acknowledge what has taken place for them. It's one thing to make honest and broad statements of apology, and that we have done as a church 27 years ago and as a nation a few years ago. It is another thing to approach every survivor, and there are at least 80,000 living today, and say to them, "I'm sorry for what the church took from you and let happen to you. It was wrong. It should never have happened. I'm sorry." You know what a genuine apology spoken from the heart can do? A genuine, true acknowledgement, how it can reorient a relationship. And I'm pleased to tell you that this is happening. Peggy and Linda and Trina and I sat in a circle on Friday while 10 survivors told their stories. And there, in the same circle, representatives of the denominations who ran the schools that they attended heard their stories, heard the pain and wreckage of their experience, and acknowledged face-to-face, apologized face-to-face for what they had experienced at the hands of those who were supposed to be instruments of the love of God. And each of them was offered a prayer shawl, many of which some of you made. It is powerful. Genuine acknowledgement and apology. There's another little piece that I believe is healing balm. But it's still not over. Because we also need to be patient. Healing takes time. The damage done to Aboriginal people and culture took place over 7 generations. The first residential school was opened in 1831. The last residential school was closed in 1996. It's a long time. That's many generations. 7 generations. And it will take at least 7 generations to recover. And if the longing for a balm to heal this brokenness is the longing for something that'll happen soon and quick, it's just not going to happen that way. A forest does not recover from a fire in one season. An abused people will not recover in one generation. Our relationship will take several generations to be transformed, and it won't be what it was. It will be something utterly new. How many times must I forgive? 7 times? 70 times? 70 times 7 times. It takes times. And I know there is a tendency when it's taking so long to say, well, what's done is done. I can't change that. It was wrong, yes. Now get past it. Dwelling on it will not help. And frankly, Alvin Dixon was standing right here almost exactly a year ago when he told the story of his own story as a survivor of residential schools. He too has limited patience for going over and over the story and is not interested in wallowing it. He said that when he was here. However, it does take time to get there. And that timing is not for you or I to say. It is for a survivor to say. Patience. It's another part of the healing balm. And finally, believe it or not, it's you. And it's me. We're part of the substance of healing. Everyone has a role to play in the creation of a new relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in Canada and in the United Church. And what can we do? Well, we can listen. We can learn. We can take advantage of the resources that are out there, and they are many, so that we can understand. Last night I downloaded a 30-minute video. It's created by the Mennonite Church, and the gentleman, a couple of people out in Chilliwack area, Sardis. Fabulous video. I'd love to show it to you. About a relationship between a Mennonite farmer and an Aboriginal survivor of the Kamloops Residential School. How that relationship, through understanding and learning and listening, transforms the both of them. We are part of a body politic, a collective Canada, a community of Christians in the United Church of Canada. And so, as a part of that body, it is up to us to learn the true history. The history that we didn't know. That we can't be judged for not knowing. But that is there to learn now. We can look for ways to support Native social services and recovery organizations. We can question things that don't make sense to us. We can ask the questions, we can risk asking the questions that appear to be politically incorrect, but that are sticking in our craw. We will not, we need to be transformed too. And we learn by asking the questions. We can turn on the news tonight and celebrate with the tens of thousands of people who are huddling under umbrellas in downtown Vancouver and walking and listening to the daughter of Martin Luther King Jr. speak of reconciliation. And who stand in the rain this morning in downtown Vancouver to say, I want the truth and I want reconciliation. I want a new relationship between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in this country. Is there a balm in Gilead? You really gotta ask that question when you hear the stories, wave upon wave of stories. But yes, there is. Yes, there is. But it is one that provides a slow healing, a communal healing, a healing that includes us and is beyond us, a healing to the community of earth, and one that involves a piece of all of us. And so you are invited to bring your peace to the table.